As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
One of the reasons for wanting to adjust policy rates higher is that if we do run into trouble, there's room to ease.
I think it's clear that we should be expecting further easing from the European Central Bank, and we should probably be expecting further easing from the Bank of Japan.
One of the concerns expressed for markets is a lack of global growth, and it really is showing up now in output.
Bloomberg Surveillance, your link to the world of economics, finance, and investment on Bloomberg Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Michael McKee and Tom Keene, Bloomberg Surveillance. We welcome all of you worldwide. Bloomberg Radio Plus, what a great app. Crystal clear, the show. All the shows on Bloomberg Radio, crystal clear. Bloomberg 1200 Boston, good morning. 960 the Bay Area in San Francisco. Corey Johnson telling me the weather out there has been just extraordinary recently. Good morning, Bloomberg 99.1 FM Washington. Of course, here in New York and nationwide, Sirius and XM Channel 119. Howard Marks. Coming up in a moment, that's always very important where we try to get uncommon sense from a thoughtful investor. That's the goal, at least. First foreign exchange, a Forex brief, brought to you by Interactive Brokers, winner of FX Week's 2015 award for the best retail Forex trading platform. Visit IB at IBKR.com/Forex. I'm watching peso as a proxy, stronger Mexican peso. In the last number of days, as emerging markets calm in the churn that we have mid-February, 18.15, yen stronger, 113.88, euro weaker, sterling weaker as well. Well, I'd stand corrected. Sterling shows a little bit of gain, 143.80 here, as the prime minister migrates to Brussels on Brexit. We will exit right now to the equity markets. Walmart, 10-year track record, 4.5% per year. David, that doesn't get it done, does it?
No, it's certainly the latest outlook from Walmart didn't get it done either. Before we get to that, though, we should point out there's some breaking news. IBM agreeing to buy Truven Health Analytics for $2.6 billion. It's the fourth health data-related acquisition at IBM in less than a year, and the biggest deal since Ginni Rometty took over as IBM's chief executive 3 years ago, and IBM shares are up 2.5% in early trading. Now we'll turn to Walmart.
Please.
It's down 4%. The world's largest retailer said this year's sales will be relatively flat. Walmart had expected sales to rise as much as 4% this year. Company attributed the cut to a stronger dollar and a push to close underperforming locations. Then Perrigo, down 7.5%. The generic drug maker's fourth quarter revenue and adjusted earnings failed to meet analyst average estimates in a Bloomberg survey. Perrigo said it plans to exit some brand name consumer healthcare products, an area that it only recently entered. NVIDIA, though, up 8%. The biggest maker of graphics chips made a fiscal first quarter revenue forecast that beat estimates. Sustained demand for gaming computers allowed NVIDIA to weather a slump in personal computer sales. And speaking of computers and software and networking equipment, Ingram Micro distributes all those products, and its shares are up 22%. Ingram Micro accepting a $6 billion takeover offer from China's Jianjin Tianhai Investment.
Two more.
Marathon Oil up 4%. The energy producer said it would cut investment this year by more than 50% and also reduce production. Marathon's fourth quarter revenue beat estimates and its loss was in line with projections. Devon Energy, on the other hand, down 6%. The oil and gas producer raising as much as $1.3 billion by selling the equivalent of a 13.5% stake.
A lot going, David. There's a lot of dynamics going on in oil right now, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
the bankruptcy the other day.
Well, you've got a few of those, and you've got Warren Buffett stepping up an investment in Phillips 66, courtesy of Berkshire Hathaway, and also moving into Kinder Morgan as sort of a related business.
Yeah, Kinder Morgan caught my attention yesterday. Right now, Howard Marks of Oak Street. Let's get right to it, Howard. We don't have enough time today. In distressed bonds, is the moment we're in an opportunity for Mr. Marks, or is it you're under the desk? Which is it?
No, I think that for the long-term investor, I think it's a very good opportunity. Things are a lot cheaper than they were 9 months ago, 6 months ago. Negativity, excuse me.
And it's okay, it's Bloomberg Surveillance. You're allowed to clear your
And risk aversion has made its way into the market. And we want to buy when investors are worried and cautious. We don't want to buy when they're optimistic and euphoric. And that makes this a much better time.
Well, is there something that has fundamentally changed in the underlying dynamic of the markets that have people panicking, or is this irrational?
No, I think it's irrational. You know, I put out a memo in January called On the Couch, referenced the fact that the market needs a trip to the shrink once in a while. And I said in there that what happens in the market is it only looks at the positives and it interprets everything positively as long as it can. And then it gives up the ghost and it flips 180 and it starts looking at everything negatively. And I think I date that to late China. There was a big spike in the VIX and China reported bad economic news, declining market, surprising devaluation, and people freaked out. And in the memo, there was a cartoon and a newscaster saying that everything that was good for the market yesterday was bad for it today.
I remember.
And that's the way these things go.
Were they wearing a bow tie?
No bow tie.
Okay, good.
But the thing is that, you know, people are in the market. People are rarely objective, clinical, and rational, and they go to extremes. And in my opinion, they went from optimistic to pessimistic. Now, I'm not saying they're not going to become more pessimistic, Michael, but I'd rather buy them today than 6 months ago.
Now, you, Bloomberg News notes accurately that you made a lot of money off an investment with Jeffrey Gundlach when he started Double Line. But is the bond market still going to pay, even with Mr. Goodluck's wonderful track record, is the bond market still going to pay like it has the last few years? Or now is it squeezing out the pennies because we've come so far?
I think that a highly skilled manager, which is what I think Jeff is, will always be in demand. You know, people have money. They want to turn that money into more money. Hopefully they want to do it safely. The people who can do that will be in demand, and their companies will be profitable. By the way, we haven't cashed that investment yet. So, you know, this is the appreciation that some people say we're looking at.
Right.
But we're not. I don't claim to have pocketed that kind of money.
Within the work, and I know Jeff quite well, within his mathiness, and the phrase you just used, highly skilled, does the institutional buy side and hedge fund world have the intellectual chops given the competition for yield and spread analysis? Are there a few people like Howard Marks and Jeff Gundlach out there, or are you pretty impressed by the intellectual content you see?
You know, Tom, on average, people are average. Historically, the average institutional investor, I'm not talking about the bond world, I'm talking about the investment world, the average institutional investor has done about average. So my comments are with regard to the rare exceptional person.
Yeah.
And I think Jeff is that person. And I think that the exceptional person will always be successful.
What makes an exceptional investor?
In my book, the most important thing, chapter one says...
Cue this shameless plug music. Go right ahead.
But chapter one says the most important thing is second-level thinking. And the exceptional person sees things that the average person doesn't see and sees them differently. And if you want to perform exceptionally, you have to think and see exceptionally. So the first-level thinker says it's a great company, you should buy the stock. The second-level thinker says it's a great company, but it's not as great as everybody thinks. You should sell the stock. You see, it's like the second derivative in calculus. You have to take your insight.
The stock's going to go up because everybody thinks it's great, but yeah. I can see the weaknesses, so I'm going to get on the other side.
Yeah,
of that.
Howard, we're a hockey show. What that means is Gretzky went to where the puck was going to be.
That's right.
The basic idea. But within the model that you've got, I would suggest the winners recently have been people with really acute dynamics, taking multi-asset and cross-asset analysis and being able to look at that and then, as you say, filter forward to where we're going to be.
Yeah, well, Sid Cottle, who was a professor at Columbia 50 years ago, said that investment is the discipline of relative selection.
Yeah.
In other words, that's what your cross-market term was a reference.
Should everybody read Security Analysis, Graham.Gottel?
Well, I think they should. Yeah, that's
to me, it's a rite of passage. You have to read to understand a more static railroad time.
And by the way, in 05 or 06, we reissued the 1940 edition. I think the new one is more readable, so I'd recommend that.
Can I do a shameless plug while we're piling
absolutely
on here with Howard? Should they
plugging
read the Yield book, Sidney Homer?
I think if they want to know how bonds work.
If you want to know bonds, you got to go back to the seminal literature.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You have to have – by the way, my belief, Tom, is that most people who participate in the markets don't really understand how profits are made. They just think, well, you buy something that's going to go up tomorrow. But you have to know what's going to make it go up tomorrow.
In the relative nature. Can we go on for 3 hours with Howard?
Yeah, I think we could need that.
Howard Marks, thank you for stopping by today with Oaktree. And we didn't even get to the basic idea of coupon or total return within where we are within bonds. Futures up 5 is just a churn to the screen. Howard Marks taking the rest of the day off. 31.64 per barrel on West Texas, up 98 cents. Brent crude up $1. 35.46, and just again a churn within this. The stronger yen 113.89, and the euro 110.83.
Now let's check in with Michael Barr and get the latest world and national headlines. Michael,
Mike, Tom, thank you very much. President Barack Obama will announce today that he will be traveling to Cuba in mid-March. It will be the first time in almost 9 decades that a U.S. president has visited the island. Stop would be part of a broader trip to Latin America. Vice President Joe Biden says President Obama is looking to nominate someone who's had past support from Republicans to replace late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Biden told Minnesota Public Radio today the president is not going to be able to pick the most liberal jurist in the nation and put them on the court. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has a 19-point lead over Ted Cruz in the latest Bloomberg Politics poll ahead of Saturday's South Carolina primary. Meanwhile, Cruz is leading all candidates in the scramble for oil industry campaign cash, surpassing Jeb Bush. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists in more than 150 news bureaus from around the world. I'm Michael Barr. Mike, Tom?
Michael, thanks so much. Good morning. Bloomberg 1200 Boston, 960 the Bay Area. Corey Johnson and Carol Masser coming along in an hour. Bloomberg Surveillance.
Market Driver is brought to you by your Mercedes-Benz Tri-State dealer. When it comes to winter elements, put your best four wheels forward with Mercedes-Benz 4MATIC all-wheel drive. Visit your Mercedes-Benz Tri-State dealer for a test drive today.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by Interactive Brokers and CME Group. If you're looking for global futures contracts with low trading costs, look no further. Interactive Brokers is the industry leader. Learn more at interactivebrokers.com/CME Group. The relief rally that swept through U.S. equities is entering a fourth day with U.S. stock index futures higher. S&P E-mini futures up 5 points, Dow E-mini futures up 58, and NASDAQ E-mini futures up 16. The DAX in Germany is up 1.6%. 10-year Treasury, little change. The yield 1.81%. NYMEX crude oil up 3.5% or $1.06 to $31.72 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.4% or $4.70 to $12.06.70 an ounce. The euro $1.1079. The yen 113.89. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thanks so much. We just spoke with Howard Marks about creative investment in distressed debt. Working in the more institutional world is a legendary Margie Patel, working with Wells Fargo Asset Management, and she joins us now. Margie, how much fun have the last 3 months been?
Well, they've been pretty fun because I've basically been out of the really bottom tier that's gotten very, very hurt.
So it's an opportunity now. How do you, and this is something that's come up in conversation after conversation, how do you manage cash is a productive asset in a prospectus-based mutual fund? How do you do that?
Well, I don't have a lot of cash personally. I feel I have other liquid bonds that I could meet any unexpected outflow. Other people have a strategy of holding more cash, but with cash basically at zero, it seems we're better off going to a name we think can survive and has the liquidity that if we need to sell, we could sell.
That's a big question in the academic debate over the markets these days of whether or not there is enough liquidity. And if you could sell, would you find buyers in a crisis? That seems to be the question.
Well, there's always buyers for the better quality, more scarce merchandise. Always, always. It may be a little bit lower than the quote, but there are always buyers there, particularly when you think that in the whole high-yield market, mutual funds are maybe only a quarter, and there may be 50% of the market is made up of long-term buyers who buy the good stuff, meaning pension funds, insurance companies. They're always there standing in the wings waiting to take advantage. And the bottom-tier stuff, there really is no bid because the whole vulture investing, extremely investors, have just disappeared.
So this is the money, beautifully said, Mike. That was a great question which got to a brilliant answer. Then, Margie Patel, do our listeners through you take the opportunity to migrate to lesser quality material, or do you just have to avoid it right now?
You have to avoid it right now. I think less will continue to be more. Lower coupon, better quality issues will continue to outperform the big yielders because you won't have that risk of principal loss, which is going to occur in a lot of the lower tier names.
Do you think that Treasury rates are going to go significantly lower?
Well, I've been thinking the 10-year is in a 1.5, 2.5 trading band, and that's where we've been, and I think that's where we're going to stay, and I think we're likely to plumb the lower levels of that before we get to 2.5, actually. And it'll, I think it'll move really pretty much unrelated to what happens in high yield. They're really pretty much delinked at this point.
Margie, within the coupon, and I didn't get to this question with Howard Marks, and I think for you, frankly, it's more germane. Are you managing for coupon, which is X number of basis points above what anybody else can get, or can there actually be a total return opportunity if you haven't been hurt by the carnage that we've seen?
Well, I'm managing for total return, and that doesn't mean so much capital appreciation as capital preservation, just not having any credit accidents and earning a modest coupon more than I could get at investment grade. In other words, a defensive strategy still.
Michael McKee, was that a jargon alert? What's a credit accident?
Well, that's when a credit that you weren't really watching or you thought was pretty much money good announces very, very negative mood and you suddenly lose 10 or 20 points overnight.
We call that on Bloomberg Surveillance, Margie, being wrong.
You couldn't survive if you didn't have a good acronym for it. Credit accident is a good one. How correlated do you see markets going forward here? We've been talking in recent days about this one-to-one correlation among all these asset classes that seems to have finally broken this week. But how true was that and how true is it going to be going forward?
You know, I think correlations between asset classes a lot of times is just happenstance, happen for a specific purpose, and you can't really put that into the future to determine how asset classes work together because I think the fundamentals are driving different things. You know, for example, you've had a big jump up in equities over the last few days. High yield has had a modest few basis point improvement. So that's a great example that they really aren't very closely correlated.
People have been saying oil has been driving, has been the tail wagging the dog. Is that a relationship that's going to hold?
Well, I think low oil prices are going to continue to weigh on the bottom part of the high-yield market, and that's where the majority of defaults are going to be. I don't see any change there. I think that the outlook for oil is still pretty dire and will basically be in that $20 to $35 range.
What is the pricing, then, of garbage oil debt versus better quality survivor oil debt? Is that an opportunity to rotate into famous names with their bonds?
I think even the famous names are going to be under pressure because I think their values reflect higher oil prices than we're going to see.
But there is a theory that if you pick the right distressed energy bonds, you'll still get paid because they'll be assumed by the buyers. That it won't be so many bankruptcies as there will be forced sales.
Oh, I really, really don't think we're going to see people get bailed out by distressed companies selling to another purchaser. And the reason is simply they took on too much debt and they paid way too much for the properties that they bought, you know, assuming oil would be $80 to $100 forever. So I think the recovery value is going to be, you know, 10 cents on the dollar, no good company is going to come in and buy those companies.
Margie, we'll get more out of you in 4 minutes than any other guest. Absolutely fabulous. Margie Patel with Wells Fargo Asset Management. Mike, I put that out on Twitter. That was so important. Her idea of better quality oil debt, struggling. She would still avoid it harmed as the garbage is harmed as well. What a world. I, you know, 10 years ago, would you say we'd be looking at 5% as a total return?
No. West Texas, 3166, up 3.3%.
Yeah.
Brent is up almost 3% on the day, 3552.
They are up what we call a stick. That's jargon for $1. Stay with us. Bloomberg Surveillance.
We are counting down to the opening bell, brought to you by the refined Jeep Grand Cherokee Overland. It continues to raise the bar with its luxurious interior and legendary 4x4 capability. Drive one at your local Jeep dealer today. Jeep, the official vehicle of Killington Resort.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1200. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, SiriusXM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app at Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow, along with Tom Keene and Michael McKee, and the opening bell brought to you by SEI. Imagine a global operating platform designed to deliver a differentiated and technologically rich investor experience. Find out how SEI can help you succeed at seic.com/imagine. Stocks higher at the open, the S&P 500 up 0.1% or 2 points to 1929. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 0.3% or 47 points to 16,500. NASDAQ up 0.3% or 12 points to 45.46. 10-year Treasury is up 1/32nd. The yield 1.81%. Yield on the 2-year 0.74%. NYMEX crude oil up 3.5% or $1.06 to $31.72 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.4% or $4.50 to $12.06.90 an ounce. The euro $1.1076. The yen 113.85. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thanks so much. I just put out on Bloomberg Radio Plus where the A-rated yield curve was 3 years ago, 2 years ago, whatever, and where it is now. Peter Hayes joining us. He works for the Price to Perfection Fund at BlackRock. I'm kidding. He works in municipal bonds at BlackRock. We never have him on enough. Peter, good morning. Your world price to perfection, price up, yield down?
Price to perfection, it's priced pretty well. Hard to define perfection. We've certainly had a lot of good performance the end of 2015 so far this year. Remember 2015, the best performing fixed income asset class, and we've seen a lot of that momentum. So I'd say we're certainly priced from, at least from a relative value standpoint, maybe a little less attractively than we were in the middle of last year.
So then what do you do? Do you grab the coupon, or do you have to be more aggressive, more analytical in protecting capital?
I think it's actually a great point you bring up about the grab the coupon, because that's what munis are about. In fact, that's what fixed income generally is about. If you look at the breakdown of performance last year between coupon or income and price, the coupon dominated, and I think that's going to be the theme for this year, given we have a benign rate outlook as well. So I think, how do you maximize that income without taking a lot of risk? We're not advocating going out and taking 30- or 40-year risk, because the valuations we talked about earlier are a bit rich. So right now, the best-performing part of the curve, where we see value, is in the 10- to 12-year part of the curve. It's a good way to not sit in cash, get more income, without taking a lot of interest rate risk.
Is that working in the sense that normally when the Fed starts raising rates, you see your biggest moves, biggest impacts at the short end of the curve, which they control? The long end is not supposed to move as it has in this sort of world where the neutral real rate is so compressed.
Mm-hmm. In past cycles, clearly what takes place is you do see a steepening of the curve, and then that's prior to the Fed tightening. Once they begin tightening, the curve begins to flatten. The back end comes down because inflation expectations get lowered from supposedly weaker economic growth if Fed policy does work. We think this time, you know, I hate to say this time is different, but this time may be different just where we're coming from. First of all, it does seem the Fed is certainly taken out of play, at least for the next couple of meetings. meetings, and we just think that the impact and where rates are coming from and the magnitude and the path of Fed policy is likely to be contained in the very, very front end. So that by mean, we mean T-bills, we mean very short Treasury notes, but right. not out the curve, not beyond 5 or 7 years.
Peter Ace, you know divorces start and end in courtrooms about revenue bonds.
Right.
What's the big mistake people are making now, not in the general obligation, full faith and credit space, but in the ugly revenue space? Is airports my worst nightmare?
I don't think it is the worst nightmare. If you look at, you know, especially some of the bigger airports, let's focus on the Newarks and the San Francisco,
Denver,
and Chicago,
yeah,
O'Hare's,
yeah,
and the Denver's, right. Yeah. I mean, we're seeing, you know, they're considered origination and destination airports. We're seeing good employments, good traffic. You know, the number of passengers flying seem to be greater. Airlines are benefiting from lower oil prices. So there's a lot of benefits. And you get some yield in the revenue part of the space. In fact, if you take your argument about general obligation versus revenue, the general obligation, which was considered sacrosanct, Detroit has shaken the foundation of that thought process a little bit. Chicago, Illinois, there's some problems right. out there in the general obligation space. We, in fact, find revenue bonds to be safer because that willingness to pay doesn't come into question on the revenue side.
What's my yield pickup 10, 20 years out on a revenue piece?
You could pick up on an A-rated bond. You could pick up a good 40 or 50 basis points.
Okay, 40 or 50 basis points, fine. But where's my revenue trap right now? You talk lovely about airlines, and I sort of know where the question's going, folks. Okay, I get that. Where am I? I mean, boy, were there some train wrecks 20 and 30 years ago.
I think you have to look at just, you know, the very low-rated space, isolated, smaller issuers, even
okay.
getting back to airports. You know, some of the regional airports, perhaps not as strong as some of the big origination and destination airports. So it's that question of stretching for yield. Do you want to take more credit risk, get a little bit more income? But clearly there's some traps out there as well. And then even in the general obligation space, you know, there's different types of GOs that some of it would argue is revenue-like. And I think you have to be careful there. So a lot of differentiation among credits in the municipal space.
What about ratings risk going forward? A lot of unfunded pension liabilities aren't being fixed by an economy mm-hmm. that isn't growing gangbusters.
Right. That's the big risk. That's where we see the big divergence in credit. And you see that places like New Jersey, places like Illinois, Chicago. Chicago, Moody's downgraded them below investment grade for a city of that magnitude, third largest metropolitan economy in the U.S. So they're being penalized for not taking action on their pensions. The question everybody has is, how do you fix the pension problem? There has to be some type of pension reform, or you have to increase taxes to pay for it. And right now, nobody wants to do either one. So in the meantime, you have a lot of downward pressure
wow.
on those entities that have big pension problems.
I mean, I'm looking at a nine-year bullet bond, Chicago, the fives of 25, 4.61%. That really shows the angst, doesn't it?
That's a lot of yield for a city of that size. And some of that comes down to the political dysfunction. It's hard to – we can look at balance sheets and we can come up with a credit determination. Hard to predict the political atmosphere. Really hard to know what they're going to do.
Right. Mike, we should talk about price as well here. You've enjoyed losing $3 on your bond 105 to 102 over the last 6 weeks.
Yes.
As you capture your 4.61%.
Well, it's been an interesting 6 weeks, but is that going to turn around? I mean, we're getting beyond that, I presume.
I think it's a lot. You know, what's your expectation for rates going forward? Do you believe the U.S. economy is really slipping into a recession? The market was beginning to price that in last week when 10-year treasuries were pushing down towards 150. Now we're backing up again saying, okay, maybe the economy isn't as bad as we thought. From a municipal standpoint, some of that performance we talked about earlier, we're likely to give a little bit of that back. In fact, we've given about 30 basis points back over the last couple trading sessions. We're coming into a period of time where we see increased issuance. That's sometimes a good time to buy. Let the market digest that, adjust accordingly, and then lock in some of those yields we talked about.
Peter, 30 seconds left. You're in the 90th percentile 1 year back on one of the BlackRock closed-end funds. You're 98th percentile last year. Do you just take the year off when you do that?
No, we try not to take the year off. It's, you know, the closed-end funds are a little bit different animal because they're traded, obviously,
yeah.
on stock price, equity exchange. You have to look at the distinction between NAV and closed-end fund. They're all about maximizing income, maximizing exposure out in the long end of the curve.
Yeah. congratulations on a 2015. Peter Hayes is with BlackRock as we
thank you very much.
Advantage of tax-free bonds. All you need to know within the indeterminate nature of the week, I got green and red on the screen, the Dow up 14 points, the VIX 22.43, S&P 500 down 1.70 tiny T-sweets points, 1925 on the S&P. That really shows a lot about the jumble.
This hour of Surveillance brought to you by Westchester Subaru. Visit WestchesterSubaru.com. Here's Michael Barr with news headlines.
Mike, Tom, thank you very much. President Obama took to Twitter to say next month I'll travel to Cuba to advance our progress in an effort that can improve the lives of the Cuban people. The last time a sitting president visited Havana was back in 1928 when Calvin Coolidge was in office. Two Republican presidential candidates have already commented on President Obama's Cuban trip. Ted Cruz, whose father fled Cuba in the 1950s, says the president should not visit Havana while the Castro family is still in power. Marco Rubio, another child of Cuban immigrants, calls the Cuban regime an anti-American communist dictatorship. Vice President Joe Biden is giving a hint of what kind of Supreme Court nominee President Obama might pick to replace late Justice Antonin Scalia. Biden tells Minnesota Public Radio that the president, in order to get someone confirmed, is not going to pick the most liberal jurist in the nation and put them on the court.
This should be someone who, in fact, is a consensus and whereby we can generate enough support to get a person passed.
Toyota is recalling about 1.1 million sport utility vehicles in the U.S. because of seat belts that might fail in a crash. Global News, 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists and more than 150 news bureaus from around the world. I'm Michael Barr. Mike, Tom.
Michael, thanks so much. Stay with us. Michael McKee and Tom Keene. We do economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Stay with us. Bloomberg Surveillance.
Bloomberg Surveillance is brought to you by Fairleigh Dickinson University. Boost your career by getting CFP certified at FDU, named one of the great schools for financial planning. Classes begin February 23rd and 24th. Visit ftu.edu/FP.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by National Realty. 30% returns on cash and rented real estate. Find them at NRIA.net. U.S. stocks, they have turned lower this after the S&P 500's strongest three-day advance in almost 6 months. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P 500 down 0.2%, or about 4 points now, to 1923. Dow Jones Industrial Average little change, down 1 point to 16,452. The NASDAQ down 0.3%, or 12 points, to 4522. 10-year Treasury up 0.7, the yield 1.79%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.73%. NYMEX crude oil up 2.4%, or 73 cents, to $31.39 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.1%, or $1.60, to $12.0970 an ounce. The euro, $1.1103, the yen 113.66. Americans' expectations for the economy declined in February to a three-month low as optimism propelled by job growth and cheaper gasoline at the start of the year faded. A monthly measure tracking the economic outlook dropped to 42.5 from a January reading of 47. That was the highest in 7 months. This according to data from the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index. And NVIDIA, the best performer in the S&P 500 today, up more than 11% after it predicted sales that may exceed analyst estimates. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Houston. Karen, thank you. Houston, we have a problem. Joining us now, Peter Elliott, Bloomberg Reserve, the outrage of Houston, rating higher than the New York City food world. According to the Washington Post, this article, shock and awe, coast to coast.
Shock and awe, coast to coast. Good morning.
To the guy's credit, he ate in 271 restaurants.
200, you know, so do I. But I don't agree with him.
Help us, Houston.
First of all, a piece by Tom Setsuma, who's a wonderful writer and
yes,
a colleague.
Yes.
And I actually see more of this about the whole listization of the world.
Thank you.
That everything winds up in a top 10 list. I mean, it is just sort of ludicrous to argue that New York City. You're an economist, so it's the third largest economy in the globe or something. New York City is somehow ranks below Houston as a food city. This is the thing for any New Yorker, anybody who's coming to our beloved city by the sea. I always say the same thing. If you start at 125th Street and walk down any of our avenues, you'll see more food in more places in more styles at actually more reasonable prices than still any place on Earth. If you just walk down Second Avenue from its entire length and breadth, you see more than Washington, Houston, Atlanta, Charleston, any of these cities. Is it fun to talk about how Portland and Atlanta and Charleston and Houston
yeah, sure.
have come to be food cities as well? Absolutely. But in no way do I think that New York has in any way lost its crown.
Well, as someone who used to live in Washington for a long time, I can tell you that for a long time, Washington could not even claim to be a food city, let alone to put itself on a list. Oh,
well, there you'd be wrong. There you'd be wrong, my friend. Washington has come incredible.
Oh, no, I'm saying it's come a long way.
I mean, just Jose Andres alone. But this is the other thing I think that's interesting about this, and it may say a great deal about what's happening in this country right now. New York remains one of the few cities in the world that remains a late city that works from morning to lunch to afternoon to cocktails to dinner. In Los Angeles, which has really changed, like Washington has really changed, I can absolutely assure you that even the hottest restaurant in town is empty at 9 o'clock at night. So, you know, all of these cities share something in common in that they do not have, they have great new restaurants. They have wonderful new restaurant scenes, but in no way do they have that kind of round the clock circulation that a city like New York has.
Yeah.
I can't even think of another city except for maybe Hong Kong that has that kind of open door policy.
Leaving aside the silliness of creating a list, topping his list is Portland, Oregon, and you have had many very nice things to say about
exactly.
The restaurants
I have many nice things to say about all of these cities. Amongst them, Houston, though probably less so. Portland is certainly one of my favorite food cities at the moment. So is Austin, Texas. So is Los Angeles. There's more interesting things happening. So it brings up the thing we often talk about, which is what is making cities like Los Angeles and Portland and Washington and Houston suddenly become relevant in the food world. And that is that many of them really truly are being driven out of New York because of the high price of it. Now, that doesn't mean that Portland and Los Angeles and Washington don't have similar problems with high rent and service and all of that kind of stuff. But New York, it has become critical.
Catch your underwears, but you're so good we can do this. Porterhouse is iconic at the Time Warner Center. It's like a CNN hangout and all that. It's a great steak, and there's a view of the west side and that. And they're closing it for renovations. What's the Peter Elliott formula to do renovations right? Because what I see is they do them, and they always lose the magic of any given restaurant.
That is an interesting point. Porterhouse is a restaurant in, as you say, the Time Warner Center, and actually one of the few really successful ones. It's really intriguing for all the mess of the restaurants that have gone on there, from the stuff going on at Per Se to reasons why people don't want to go through a mall to get to Masa to spend, you know, $1 zillion on sushi. Porterhouse is Michael LaMonaco. Michael LaMonaco was the chef at Windows on the World, tragically. Also at 21 Club, just a classic New York guy. You know, Michael LaMonaco is just one of the great New York chefs. He just does his job, gets the steak out, has a nice
exactly.
room, is happy
That's
to
exactly
have it there.
What it's like.
He's just
exactly.
like a little old school, a little new school, and he's terrific. Now, the good news about this and your point about that is that what's he going to do with the Time Warner space that's going to change it so much? It's still going to look like, you know, eating the Time Warner Center. So, I mean, I think you're probably right that even though, you know, he may mess something up along the way or take its thing, the reason people are going there are for his food and for the view, and that it's just a very, very convenient place, kind of at the crossroads of New York media.
Yes.
So I hope he won't mess it up, and I can't really imagine that he would. I'm sure it's just like freshening it up, like an airline.
But in London, the Covent Garden Hotel, wonderful hotel near the Seven Dials, they're renovating. waiting, and the guy said to me they're doing the bar or whatever out. What's the trend now in the madness of your world between moving drinks and moving food? The answer is still make a bigger bar, right?
Is make a bigger buck. The answer is also, Mr. Economists or dual economists, is just it's capitalism, isn't it? It's just the pressure to stay new is so intense. And the wear and tear that restaurants and hotels get. How many times have you been in a hotel that says, gosh, this place hasn't been updated since, you know, what, 1999? Mm. But in truth, a year in the life of a restaurant or the year in the life of a restaurateur can be very hard. So it's really important that they keep up and make it look new. And the old-fashioned thing, Sergio Macioni at Le Cirque always used to say, the first thing that, you know, clients do is look to see if there's wear and tear on the chairs. And that can be a reason that they never come back. You know, it's a relentless business. So you really do have to make sure that you are keeping up and nobody finds holes in your upholstery.
We were just talking with John Tisch, Jonathan Tisch from Lowe's Corporation, who pointed out that coming up is the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. I imagine that you will be there. He was just telling us how amazed he was at how much that thing has grown. He remembers the first one in a parking lot at Florida International University.
Yes, well, there you have it. And let us not forget that Mr. Tisch owns the Lowe's Hotel, which is the center of the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. So he has quite an interest in making sure that it is well received and going to be bigger and better than ever. It is amazing what's happened. It indeed was very, very small, and now it's something like 75,000-80,000 people. What's interesting to me about the South Beach Wine and Food Festival, besides the fact that its concentration is so specific, is its breadth. That it used to be a very Food Network-related thing. You're talking about Rachel Ray and Burrell and hamburgers and all of that stuff. But what it's really, that you can draw serious talent, kind of this, what Tom would call snooty, you know, Copenhagen, you know, René Redzepi and Alex Adela and all of these kind of hybrid super specific chefs are also going to South Beach Wine and Food Festival. This year they have particularly lucked out because the weather stinks, so everybody wants to be there.
We started with Houston. Let's close out with Houston. 205 East Houston Street is, I mentioned this to somebody the other day. They said, where should I go for the real New York? And I said, Katz's Delicatessen.
Katz's is still wonderfully. So is Russ and Daughters. And as we speak, we should have started here. Carnegie Deli is reopened.
Yes.
This very
week. The deli still thrives in New York City.
Thrive is a strong word. I mean, when you're down to Barney Greengrass, Russ and Daughters, Katz's, and now Carnegie. So, the diner is definitely a dying breed. Which is sad for New York, but Katz's is still a wonderful place, and Russ and Daughters, which is not only taken it but refined it and expanded it, they're probably the ones to look at in the diner category right now.
Katz's Deli, 127 years, which is how long Peter Elliott has done Bloomberg Reserve. We think this is 2 weeks in a row. This is too much, Peter Elliott. Where do you travel to next?
I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm off to a great food city, San Francisco.
Very good, San Francisco. We say good morning, Bloomberg 960, the Bay Area. We announced to you when C. Johnson and C. Masser will attend for your early morning San Francisco, and of course worldwide on Bloomberg Radio. Looking forward to that, Peter Elliott. Thank you. So much. A mixed market, again, indeterminate is the word I've been using all week. The Dow up 12. S&P 500 goes the other way, negative 2. We are produced by YUN, our global technical director, Ken Fellio. Next, Carol Masser, Corey Johnson. Stay with Bloomberg Radio.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.